Sports, wine, life. This is the Macko and Cause podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cause podcast. I'm Matt Cause. Oh, thank you. And that's Bob Mackowitz. I got a sound device for a Christmas gift, Bob.
You got a little soundboard there, Matty.
I do.
What are some of the other sounds?
Let's see, we got...
Yeehaw!
That's good. Oh, that's like... Oh, are they cutting taxes again?
Now, is that a happy scream or a scared scream?
That's a scared.
That's what I thought.
Oh, that's a fart. Yeah, this podcast is getting off to a flying start here, Bob. Oh, no, don't boo it.
This is the closest we've been to being on radio in a long time.
Hey, how about those wacky politicians?
Wow, that machine can do anything.
Ooh, topical.
How about those clowns in Senate? What a bunch of clowns.
Oh, and there's a mattress on the highway. Oh, Joan Collins must be in town.
Ooh, topical. All right, let's get to work here. Yeah. Leafs, Raptors, tons of observations. I'm back from BC. You're back from St. Catharines.
I was in St. Catharines for a Christmas party.
Where do you want to start? I got so many things to go over, Matt. I don't even know where to begin. Do you want to just dive into the Leafs now?
Sure, and then we'll do the Christmas tree later.
Okay, I want to talk about planes.
Yep.
I want to talk about the Golden Globes.
Yep.
I want to talk about something that drives me nuts at restaurants.
Yep.
So much to do.
Oh my God, the Golden Globes. I got stuff there. I was at the dentist the other day. Oh, it is a packed number 102.
Hopefully we can get to the Nylander thing.
Well, let's start there.
Okie dokie.
What Nylander thing?
Well said. Well said. The guy hasn't played in like 250 days.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, they threw him out there. He hasn't even really practiced with the team, just like a little bit.
Yeah.
And he looked exactly the way you would expect. Kapanen looked good.
Yeah, Kapanen looked good.
Well, we shouldn't bury the lead.
Yeah.
Holy cow, that game sucked.
Yeah, that game did suck.
They did lose in overtime after an exciting third period, but the first two periods, wow, against a really crappy team too in the Red Wings.
Now, to be fair, they're like 8-1-3 or something. Like, they've played well over their last 15 games. They were horrible in the first like 15 games, but they've been playing better. But then they are a bad team, and sometimes crappy teams have good runs, and right now the Red Wings are in their good run for not a very good team.
Garrett Sparks, tough night for him.
Yeah.
Couple clunkers. Looked okay in the third.
He's mixed bag. Garrett Sparks is a loot bag. You don't know what's in there. You know, it's a, you know, like this.
Soundboard him, Matt. Soundboard him.
I'm going to press a button. I don't know what this is going to do.
Random. So random. I guess, what's that, like falling down a flight of stairs with some pots and pans?
That's what I use whenever I'm at a regatta, the air horn. But he's a mixed bag.
Did you say whenever I'm at a regatta?
I did.
Wow, okay.
When I'm regatta-ing. He's a mixed bag. I mean, he's been that all year.
Yeah, sometimes you know what
he's shutting out. Sometimes he's given up five goals.
Fifth starter in baseball.
Yeah.
You know, you just hope you can get 500 out of him.
Yeah. But
that would be great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of hurts that Curtis McElhinney is looking pretty good. But it doesn't matter. He's an asset. He's young. He'll turn it around. You know what, though? On that breakaway in overtime with Dylan Larkin, it's been a long time since I've seen a goalie look that flustered and afraid.
Yeah. But a minute or so before that, made a great save. I think it was also on Larkin on a 2-on-1. So
it was just sliding across and the pad juts out. But you know what that really speaks to? The difference between reacting to danger and seeing danger coming.
Yes.
He looked terrified because he had a moment to say, oh shit, here comes their best score.
Yeah.
And the game's on the line. And you could see he looked terrified.
Yep.
He went down, he went up, he went down, he went up. He actually, I'm not even sure if he bit on a fake. I think he just started chewing.
Yeah, he was bad. The first and fourth goal, long shots. Yes, there's some screens, but you got to make those saves. It was a bad night. It was a bad night for Sparks. This will be a Mike Babcock. I haven't listened to anything this morning. I imagine the expression, you know, we showed up late for work. We didn't start on time. It's good. Like, if you're going to do the wheel of cliche, that's the one that Babcock's going to use. You know.
Any thoughts on Nylander in the lineup?
No.
Do you want to roster bait a bit? I feel like he was bad you can't roster bait.
No, you can't.
Just stick him on the third line, let him get his reps, and then put him back up with the first.
I was all ready to roster bait, but then Wi-Fi cut out. Oh, God, that's dirty. Yeah, listen, he didn't play in the last 12 minutes. He didn't play a lot of time, but he hasn't played since late April. We were hoping for more. And then by the end of the game, you're like, oh, yeah, that's kind of what that should look like.
The hopeful Leafs fan thought it would be like Austin Matthews' debut where he knocks in four.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The realistic hockey fan says, if he gives you 12 minutes,
yeah,
that would be a win. You know what really jumped out at me, though? Mm. And I believe it was Zach Hyman who pointed this out, but you could really see it as, man, he skates with his head up constantly.
Yeah.
It's like predatory out there. He reminded me of a jungle cat looking for his next meal. He gets the puck on his stick, his head is up, and he is surveying everything. You see it with Marner, too. And by the way, Marner had an up and down kind of night, but boy, his ups were great.
Yes.
But back to Nylander, you could just see the difference between a skill set like that and a guy who's an average NHLer. One guy is looking to make plays. The other guy is looking to dominate the ice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a perfect way of putting it. Marner was good. Helped set up some goals, blah, blah, blah.
I don't know. Blah, blah, blah. You got to admit, that turn back against the boards when he set up, I think it was the third goal.
Yeah.
That was exactly the kind of play people were afraid were going to get his head mashed in when he got to the NHL, but he seems to know when to do it and when not to do it. He avoids danger beautifully, but God, his edge work is incredible.
Yeah. Oh, no, agreed. Couple thoughts from that game, other thoughts. One, Austin Matthews getting hit in the boards by Cronwall and getting up. Like, that hit looked exactly...
Soundboard it, Matt. Soundboard it.
It was me when I saw Cronwall, that dirty hit on Austin Matthews.
Did you know you were picking that one?
What's that?
Did you know you were picking that one?
I've now figured out a couple.
Too bad, because it would have been good if you randomly selected the exact right one.
Okay, well then, and then I... I guess that's how I felt when he got up. Because Matthews... Boy, I got to put this away, because we'll just play with this.
You should never put it away.
Oh, that one
everything
so
that thing says is so much more interesting than us. We've just found our third, our co-host, our Gareth Wheeler.
Our Wheeler. Hey, Wheels, bud. It's ridiculous. The fact that Matthews got up and was fine, because that is the sort of hit where the shoulder hits the boards first and you're like, oh no, not again. And he gets up and he's fine. That, for me, was the most positive, beyond even getting three goals in the third to tie it up and at least making the game watchable. That was my biggest takeaway from last night.
Although I will say, and I agree with you, but I will say when Andreas Janssen scores, man, that dude looks happy.
Yeah.
He looks so happy. He is, he's kind of like the Pascal Siakam of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that energy. Ooh. He's got that motor. He's super lovable.
Yep.
But because of hockey, you can't really see him do his thing. But in those moments, like when he scores, don't you go, man, I would love for that guy to marry my daughter in 10, 15 20, years.
20 years,
whatever it is. I haven't done the math.
Whenever you do it. First off, Bob.
It's funny. Once you have a kid,
yeah,
all men are divided into two piles. Acceptable and non-acceptable suitor.
Really?
Pretty much.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, I think it starts early. You just start seeing the world like,
no,
you're not good enough for us.
No, no. Suddenly, the exes from like Family Feud, suddenly come
soundboard
up.
Soundboard it.
All right, let's see. That one, that would be, here's Bob. Okay, see, I know.
Wait, Bob sees Andreas Janssen in 15 years.
That's you not liking someone.
Well, and that's probably what would
By the way,
happen.
Congratulations, Bob. On not only doing the different sport comparison, but different colors.
Race.
Yeah. You did white, black with hockey, basketball. Good for you, Bob.
Yeah, it doesn't happen nearly. I don't know why it's so hard for people to do.
Yeah, we get lazy. And that goal all started by Austin Matthews, where I think he used the backboard to bounce the puck to Janssen.
Do you believe that he really did that?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Because Greg Millen couldn't commit. You can see he wanted to say that he
Greg, but jump
he
in just the pool. Couldn't.
By the way, and I don't want to do broadcaster on broadcaster violence. You know, it's not like because there's no win really. But I have to admit, like John Bartlett on the call, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's a little utilitarian.
You know, it's there. It is. All right.
You know, yeah, it's just really meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm pretty sure it's not a good thing either.
Yeah, I agree.
You know who's the best? Dennis Bayak.
Bayak's excellent.
Dennis Bayak with the Winnipeg Jets does the best local call, I think, in the whole NHL.
Next to Joe Bowen. And yeah, I agree. I agree with everything you said, Bob. Jeff Merrick should not have a job.
He's a hack.
One final thought about Nylander. He is a hack. If Nylander, say, got underpaid, like let's say the headline was William Nylander is you know takes a real team friendly deal, people wouldn't be as upset today that Nylander was a no show last night. I mean, part of why people are bummed out, the Leafs lost, Nylander didn't look good, but also you know he got paid a good amount of money. If he got paid $5 million a year, people would be less upset today.
So here's what I came to realize: I had a few takeaways after all of this Nylander shenanigans, and we haven't done a pod since he signed.
Yeah.
So we haven't really had a chance to weigh in. Sort of last minute here, late, you know, late to the game, but whatever. The number one takeaway I got was: don't worry too much about balance. Mm-hmm. In the post-cap world, every team is going to have flaws.
Yep.
Just try to have the best players you can. I think when we all start getting frustrated, and all of a sudden trade rumors pop up. And we know the defense could be better. But then you start going, okay, well, would you make a deal with Nylander for a right D, knowing that the team needs it, but they're not equivalent talents?
Yeah.
And you start going, well, yeah, but we need it. And that's how the team signs Nikita Zaitsev to too long, too much money. It's because a guy like Lou Lamoriello looks at it and says, we need right D. We've got this guy. We better sign him up because we don't want any more problems. Here's too much money. Well, and that's how you get screwed.
Well, it's like in the NFL draft when they say take the best player available. Don't necessarily take you need a linebacker. So we're going to take that linebacker from Texas Tech, even though they're a more of a mid-third round pick and you're going to take them high in the second round.
It's a great analogy. I started thinking about Team Canada and how Team Canada back in the day used to try and pick, you know, from all the Canadian players in the league, a proper team.
Yeah.
First and second scoring lines, a third checking line, a fourth grinding line, some toughness. And that's how you wind up with a Rob Zamaner on the team as opposed to a Mark Messier back in 98. I was thinking about how when Steve Yzerman took over the team in 2010, you know, he was getting ready for Vancouver. The first thing he said was, we're not going to be so loyal to the guys who were here before.
Yeah.
That's kind of what happened in 2006. And he just said, look, foot speed. We're just going to get foot speed. And it makes all the sense in the world. Like you've got the best players in the world to pick from. Pick the best players.
Yeah.
They'll figure it out. They're hockey players.
Easy peasy.
You know, and in the same way with the Leafs, and I have to admit, I fell into this at times too because you get frustrated. But I watched Nylander skating out there, and I thought, you know what? It's not that hard. In the cap world, get the best players. Figure out what to do with your weaknesses later because everybody has some. There will be no team. Super teams.
No. Oh, yeah. The salary cap eliminates super teams. Speaking of salary cap, also, don't worry. Like, yes, it'd be better if Nylander's number was lower. But the cap's going up, and then eventually Seattle's going to start playing in 2021, and the cap will absolutely go up then, much like it did when Vegas came in, and then suddenly there was more revenue. So I don't worry about the percentage cap hit this year, because as long as Nylander's trajectory continues, he'll eventually be proper paid, and by the end of it, he'll be slightly underpaid.
People love the Pastrnak comparison as though, because Pastrnak is playing so well now that he's kind of paid. It's an artificially low number in the same way that Jack Eichel is probably an artificially high one, or a Leon Draisaitl is probably an artificially high one.
Yeah.
Not by a ton, but by a little. You know, they're pushing the cap in different directions, right? The comparables. And I was thinking, Pastrnak projects to be an 80-point guy. That's going to be a crazy good contract for the next 2 or 3 years if he continues to be that guy.
Yeah.
If Nylander is 80% that, that's a great number.
Yeah.
That's a great number. What if he's a 70-point player and you've got him for under $7 million a year? That's a good number.
That's a good number, 100%.
You got to gamble on talent, though. That's the thing that maybe you get in this, is if you're Kyle Dubas, you can sit there and say, I can have a bunch of pretty good players, or I can look at this guy who's super skilled and say, I bet on you to be great. I bet on my coaching staff to make you great, and you win with great players.
Yes, and that's who you gamble on. You don't gamble on the guy where you know what their ceiling is. And they're a good player, and they're going to give you an honest day's work, and they'll chip in 15, 18 goals. They'll get you 50 points.
Connor Brown.
But Connor Brown, or even a better version of Connor Brown. You know, you don't gamble on those guys. You enjoy them while you have them, and then they're disposable. You take your chances on the upper end talent.
Well, let's look at what Lou Lamoriello spent a lot of money on. Patrick Marleau, $6 million for 3 years. Mm-hmm. It's too much.
Yeah.
It's too much. You can already see he's slowing down this year. He's not a bad player.
No.
He's just not a great player. And for six, it's amazing. For $6 million bucks, people look at Patrick Marleau and say, yeah, it's a little high. And then Nylander for just under $7 million, people are like, oh, that's crazy high. What is the skill difference between those two players? What is the future for those two players? It's ridiculous, but he overpaid for character.
Yeah.
He overpaid for winning presence in the room.
And by the way, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing. It's only going to be 1 year where the contract's a little bit tough. And
Yeah, but that's the tough year.
I know that. I understand.
The 2019 year is the tough year.
But also, you know, you look at Nylander's getting paid more money this year and less the years on. And I'm not going to totally poo-poo character and leadership and been there before, because Matthews and Marner love this guy and all the pitchers with him and their family. Like, I do believe there will be
$6 million.
I also believe there will be a residual that when Marleau is done, these guys are going to learn something from it. There's nothing wrong with mentorship. Mentorship in every aspect of life is important.
Agreed. But also within a cap system, paying for the maximum amount of talent is how you actually win.
But it won't affect it. By the time the Matthews...
Do you really think on a Mike Babcock team that these guys are lacking for lessons?
No, I think sometimes the lessons have to come from everyone. It can't just be from the coach, who you view differently than you do guys in the locker room with you, your own peer group, albeit a much older one. And by the time the Matthews and Marner deal really starts to kick in, Marleau will be done. Marleau will be gone. So, I don't have a problem with it.
I wonder, and I'm not saying you're wrong, I actually really do wonder this, is that for so many years in the NHL, you needed those veteran leaders to show players, young players, the ropes, right?
Yeah.
But these kids grew up so much faster.
They
do. By the time they're 18, 19, 20, they're pretty seasoned. They've been in tournaments all over the world. They've been coached like professionals pretty much from the time they were 13 or 14 years old.
Yep.
And you see this now with RFA negotiations. How many times have we said, Matt, if you don't have somebody on their entry-level contract who's a real contributor, you're not winning?
Mm-hmm. Oh, all the time. The value of the 21, 22-year-old is so much more important than it was 20 years ago.
Which, of course, makes your RFA negotiation so much different, because you're not negotiating as a kid who's going into his prime. You're negotiating as a kid who started his prime.
Oh, yeah.
And you saw that with Nylander.
By the way, Winnipeg, get ready for that with Line A, okay?
Oh, I know. And Braden Point for Tampa.
Yeah, like, okay.
Rantanen.
Yeah, exactly. You think it's happening in Toronto, this is going to be happening everywhere.
Anyway, my point is, and I can't quantify this, I wonder.
Yeah.
Because the young kids are so much better prepared than ever before, does veteran leadership in the room mean less?
It probably means less than what it did in 1990, but I'm not going to discount it. I know perfect example. I became a better writer because of veteran leadership. That veteran was Bob Mackiewicz.
Are you calling me old?
You're older than me. Not much older, but you're older than me. And you've been working in TV longer than I did when I started off the record. You need, and anyone listening, it's good. It's not like you need a room full of guys or girls that are 30 years older than you. Going, yeah, back in my day. But you need some of them. You do. Like, this is just human psychology. You need that experience. It helps you grow when you're around someone that's like, here, let me show you a couple tips.
You're right. It's obviously got value. I'm just wondering if it has less value. Quick sidebar here.
Yeah.
Autobiographical story for the two of us. Do you remember the time I left you to write the show?
That's what I'm talking about. You left me.
What happened was, I used to write the show for Landsberg, meaning I'd write in all the questions, I'd write in the tops and the tails to all of the segments. And, you know, Matt was a really talented guy and he had started on the show and it was obvious he had a ton to contribute. So I pretended I had a meeting to go to.
Jerk.
And I just said, I got to go. I'll be back in 90 minutes. Write the show.
Yeah.
And he sat down at my desk in my computer and it was the first time he ever had to do it. And there was terror in your eyes.
Absolutely. There absolutely was terror. Yeah. I remember that well, but it was a good lesson, and you know, became a fairly good writer and could could bang out stuff when he got to bang out stuff.
Yeah, you turned into a really good writer. You learned the real lesson is just drop all fear.
Yeah.
And don't worry about failure.
Yeah, just start writing. Write crap, because you'll edit crap into not bad, into fairly good, into okay, good. We have to go with fairly good because the guests are here.
Do you remember the advice I gave you? When you're stuck, do a pop culture reference.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. As the great Chuck D would say, most of my heroes don't appear on no stamps.
See, that's perfect.
Bam, there you go.
Him card read good.
Yeah.
You know what I was thinking about yesterday watching the game? There are actually two crazy random thoughts. Which one do you want first? One's kind of crazy, the other one not so much.
Let's work our way up. So not so much and then crazy.
Playoffs are going to come down to Freddie.
Yeah.
The Leafs are an awfully good team.
Yep.
Tampa's really good.
Yep.
Tampa beat Boston last night. And there's just a handful of teams, and the Leafs are among them.
Yeah.
Say the top 4 to 6 teams in the league. They're more or less interchangeable in terms of quality. And if Freddie Anderson isn't really good, they're not going to go anywhere. Like, they may win a round.
They could win a round with bad Freddie, but you're not winning two rounds.
Right.
Because if they get a top 2 seed, they can get, you know, they can get a pretty favorable matchup. And by the way, they should. Matthews has missed so much time. Nylander's just back. I still think the Leafs are number one in goal differential in the NHL in a much harder division. You know, I mean, it's...
You know, but you watch Tampa play. They're really good.
Oh, no,
Tampa, and they're going to have a chip on their shoulder because they've been too close too many times. Yeah. I'm sure they look at this and say, this is our year. Sweet Jesus, they replenished the stock with Braden Point and Kucherov.
Yeah.
That's just nuts.
Tampa's the best team in the NHL. It's just
I think so too.
Yeah, yeah. Who's second best? It could be the Leafs. It could be Nashville. You can make an argument the Leafs are the second best team.
And there's always some team from the Metropolitan that winds up surprising everybody.
Yeah.
So I just think it's going to come down to Freddie. Like, they've built the roster good enough, and they've been coached up good enough. They can play anybody.
Yeah.
But in a 7-game series, if your goaltending is weak, you might get by once.
Yep.
But that's it.
You're so crazy.
It's Freddie time. Okay. So everybody's praising how Kawhi Leonard is being sat on back-to-backs, and you saw how he went off against Philly.
Yeah.
By the way, not coincidentally, U.S. televised game, but that's neither here nor there. Whatever. He was amazing. He looked like an MVP. But everyone's praising the idea of rest. That's because he's coming off an injury. But what about a guy like Ron Hainsey, who is older, he plays a lot of minutes, and he's on your top pairing. And he's going to be, because they don't really have a better option. And Babcock obviously likes him. Would you start resting him on back-to-backs?
Yes. I couldn't even say that quicker. Absolutely. I give him every now and then, give him the night off. It's like, Ron, we're a really talented team. Eventually, Nylander's going to get it together. We're going to be even more talented. Yeah.
You know, the drop-off, like who you would sub in, is pretty big.
But the good thing is,
there's a reason Ozhiganov has a job. It's because literally the next options are steps down, and he's not that great.
But what I like about this idea is, A, hopefully then he's got more zip in his step in the playoffs, and his Pittsburgh Penguin playoff Ron Hainsey versus Maple Leaf playoff Ron Hainsey. It also means that some of the younger guys, some of the guys in the Marlies, get him some more time. Give him some more reps. Get him more experience. Get them sitting at the computer screen and don't know what to write for Off the Record. Get, you know, seriously, get him.
Justin Hall, just do a Chuck D reference.
Yeah, exactly. But big picture, it might help them down the road. And if for the Leafs, I think they can handle that.
I don't know if Babcock's brain would fry, kind of like if you drop your, you know, when you, have you ever done this where you put your phone in the washing machine? Mm-hmm. Have you ever done that before?
No, in the washing machine?
Yeah, I washed my phone once.
I flushed my phone once down the toilet.
Really?
Yeah.
Did it actually go down, or did it just clunk around at the bottom?
Bob, it went down.
No.
Okay, real quick.
Okay, this isn't true.
Real quick. My last condo, I'm washing my hands, and then I flush the toilet, and as I go to flush the toilet, my hand hits my phone, which goes into the toilet right during the... And it is now gone. And I stare at the toilet. I stare at my sink. I stare at my toilet. I stare at my sink. And I'm like, that didn't just happen. And then I realize I've been in my condo not that long. I don't have a plunger. I have a friend in my building, Jamie, who is a couple floors down. So I race down, bang on his door. It's around 9 o'clock at night. I'm going, please don't be with a girl. Please don't be with a girl. He's not. I'm like, I tell him what happens. He gives me his plunger. He's like, I'm coming upstairs to see what happens. Plunge, 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 whoop, comes out into the sink. So then I, into the toilet, excuse me. So turn the hot water on, get the soap ready, put my hand in the toilet, throw the phone on a towel, wash my hands, turn the phone on. It magically turns on, but it's kind of broken. But here's the best part. I take it to the TELUS store, whatever, and I don't want to, all I want to do, can they transfer all my contacts to a new phone? That's all I care about. The phone, it was flushed down the toilet for 15 minutes. I can't expect anything else. And I tell them, oh yeah, water damage, because they'll know. But I tell them it goes into the sink, and I was washing dishes, so it was in the sink. I didn't tell them I flushed it down the toilet because I figured customer service for a toilet water phone would be worse than Palmolive phone.
That is an amazing story. So did you get your contacts back?
All transferred to my new phone.
Amazing.
Great. And they even printed me a hard copy. I'm an old man. I like hard copy. A hard copy of all the names and phone numbers.
How did it like go down? Like phones are
perfect
big.
Timing. Much the same.
But I mean, how did it fit?
It was a small phone. It was like a flip phone.
Flip phone back in the day.
Yeah. This was like 2004.
This was before phones were computers.
Yeah, exactly.
This is when phones
were phones.
They were phones. Wow, that's an amazing story.
Yeah.
I was going to make this really pithy observation, but there's no point now because that's the story of the year. Moving on. Do you have any more Leaf stuff you want to do?
One last one.
Okay.
Do they have to play? And I like You Make My Dreams Come True. I like that song. It's a fun song by Hall & Oates. It should be used in every movie with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. But do you need to use it after every goal? I believe, and I can check Spotify, there's more than one song in our rock and roll canon.
Well, I guess everybody wants their own Chelsea Dagger, right? Everybody, yeah. But Chelsea Dagger is a cool song, and it's exciting when you hear it. Hall & Oates, and I love Hall & Oates. I'm not disrespecting Hall & Oates, but it's just cheesy.
Yeah.
I think everything should just be the organ. Just play the organ.
And play like, you know, rock cover songs with the organ.
Like in Madison Square Garden. Once I heard them playing Peaches and Regalia by Frank Zappa.
Oh.
It was amazing.
Wow. Could we do Dynamo Hum here?
We probably could.
Yeah.
We probably shouldn't. Soundboard it. Let's see. The soundboard will tell us what to do.
Okay. I'm going to pick one random.
Nah, that's definitely a no.
That one's bad. That's Kiss. God. I'm sorry to the listeners. And you know, I'm also sorry to Bob. I'm sorry to Jeff Pollock because
He
deserves better as one of our sponsors on the show.
Before you start your... and it's
starting
not,
what, Bob? I'm not starting anything.
Yeah,
I'm just talking.
Yeah, okay.
From the
sure.
Heart.
Just randomly bringing up Jeff Pollock's name. Yeah. Remind me to come back to something at the end of this, okay?
Okay. Jeff Pollock.com. That's Jeff with a G. 416-777-0088. 416-777-0088. I'm flipping the script, Bob. I'm doing the contact info at the beginning and then the heartfelt story at the end. I'm changing the game when it comes to the podcast world. Take that, Sherry's Berries. Really, it's simple. He's our lawyer. He's been for a long time, and he's great. High-end lawyer that treats you like a person, like a friend, and you'll not be intimidated. Anything in the legal world you need done, his very small family-run law firm, they're the one for you, and they've been the one for us.
So you see, he's our lawyer?
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's my lawyer anymore.
What?
I think he may have given up on me.
Oh, no. What did you do?
I didn't do anything.
What did you do?
That's the whole thing is I didn't do anything. My lawyer phoned us about 12 times to set up an appointment to get some basic life stuff done.
Yep.
And oh, by I just the way, put it off.
Wait. Hold on. Mm-hmm. Basic life stuff. You mean your will and testament?
Yes.
To ensure the financial security of your daughter? That basic life stuff?
Yeah, that's the one. So I woke up one day and I thought, oh, wait, I'm going to need this.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it just hit me.
Yeah.
And he went on a month-long vacation. And
that's
I could
true.
Sort of read between the lines. He was like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And I've been pushing you to do this for 6 months. And now, when I'm on my way out the door with my family to go down south, now you want me to drop everything?
There he is at Pearson, you know, in security. And suddenly you're going, hey,
it's
Jeff.
Like Love Actually. And I'm chasing him towards the plane with my will in my hand.
By the way, I do want to do a Love Actually power rankings one time.
Oh, great idea.
But I want to go deep dive. The Portuguese woman that falls in love with Colin Firth. Mm-hmm. What about the restaurant owner? Because she is his best waitress.
Matt, you do not want to mess with me with Love Actually.
We'll do it next week. Okay. I watched it 2 days ago.
Okay, that's fine.
Get the hell out of here.
I've seen it probably 30 times.
Oh, The okay, one thought on Love Actually.
It's perfect, by the
way. It is.
Except for one thing.
Well, which storyline for you?
Oh, it's the one with the two friends and Keira Knightley. And the signs?
No. That one's not the worst one because that...
No, that the is wedding, the worst one.
The wedding with when they, all the different people playing the instruments is great. Like,
yeah, but that's not the point, though, because the guy is trying to, like, get with his best friend's girl. It doesn't matter that he loves her. You know what you do? Shut up,
Bob.
Don't go to her door with signs. That's cheating.
It's still a compelling storyline. It's better. The only really bad one is the guy who wants to go to America because he thinks that American women will love him.
Okay, that is good. I love that one. Okay.
What?
No, it's great. He's having fun. Shut your poop mouth on that one. It's a good one. All right, Matt, I just want you to know right now, if you come to my door while I'm in the shower and you profess your love to Sandra.
I love Sandra. She's awesome.
Yeah, if you profess your love for Sandra and she's all giddy about it and she's like, oh, I understand I'm married to that idiot in the shower, but boy, you're great. I'm going to hunt you down and kill you. Yeah. I'm going to do a Nylander, keep my head up on the ice until I find you and destroy you.
And guess what, Bob? After I leave the house, she comes running after me and gives me a kiss.
Seriously?
And then I go, enough, enough.
That, like the other guy was better. Yeah. Like you do not do that to your buddy's girl. It's the only thing that ruins that movie.
I don't know. The buddy that got married.
The Emma Thompson storyline, perfect.
The Emma Thompson one is.
Heartbreaking.
Oh,
right?
My God.
Even right down to listening to Joni Mitchell's
blue. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
One final thought on Love Actually.
Okay.
Because I like. I feel
actually,
like,
we have a top five about movies. We could probably segue right into it.
Yeah. You can tell Love Actually is going to be a great movie when the opening scene, they reference 9/11. Like when they reference that, you realize this is not your normal rom-com when Hugh Grant is referencing 9/11.
It's not as good as Four Weddings and a Funeral, but that's only because of the funeral scene where he's reading the W.H. Auden.
Okay.
But anyway, all right. So let's do so Seattle gets a team.
Yep.
They're going to be up in 2021.
Yep.
Post-lockout. Mm-hmm. And so Jerry Bruckheimer is part of the ownership group. Matt had an inspired idea.
Yep.
In honor of Jerry Bruckheimer, new member of the Board of Governors, the top five Jerry Bruckheimer movies.
Absolutely.
And I should say I went to IMDb because there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Just to remember what he made. That guy's a shitmonger.
That guy's a total shitmonger.
Wow. Like even the best movies are only okay.
No, that's not true.
It is true. Enemy of the State is okay.
Long podcast coming up here.
Long podcast! Like, okay, good. Like, leading good, but not a great movie.
Okay, here's the thing. First off, not on the list. Con Air, Armageddon, or anything with pirates. None of them are on my top five.
Also, I don't think he did the first one.
Oh, he executive produced or produced all those pirate movies.
Was it
movies.
The first one, too?
Bob, it's like Harry Potter. They're all the same to me.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
They're literally all the same.
Probably the maddest I ever got at a movie was the third one. Because it was cold and it was late and it was terrible and I just got mad at the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So your top five, Maddie.
This is so...
Top five Jerry Bruckheimer produced films.
Okay. By the way, does Enemy of the State make my top five?
Matt.
Okay.
It's a little late to make this decision.
Okay. Shut up. You shut up now. Coming in at number five, Christmas season's here. The Ref.
Mm-hmm.
With Dennis Leary. Is a and Kevin Spacey and
give me the soundboard.
It is a great movie. It's an underrated Christmas movie, Bob. That's right. I forget the female lead in it. She's been in a bunch of Woody Allen movies as well. Anyway,
isn't it Judy Davis?
It's Davis something.
I think it's Judy Davis.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking yes, Judy Davis, and she's great. And Judy Davis and Kevin Spacey are fighting couple around Christmas, And then Dennis Leary comes in and it's a house arrest or it's he's got them tied up and he's stealing from their house.
That's a home invasion.
Home invasion. Thank you.
Nice movie.
I know I hit my head on that one. But The Ref comes in at number five.
Okay.
Number four. Crimson Tide. Crimson Tide is an excellent movie.
Excellent.
Yes. Excellent movie.
Excellent movie.
Denzel Washington and Gene Hackman. Those guys going back and forth. I'm the captain of the ship. That is a great scene.
It is so 80s.
It's late 90s. Actually, it might be.
All of his movies are so 80s.
Also, do you know who's the script doctor on that movie? Who helped?
Wasn't it, what's his name? From The Newsroom.
No. It's Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, Quentin Tarantino was a...
I should have known that.
Yeah. I love Crimson Tide.
Well, they gave it the wrong medicine.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Number three, okay. Top Gun.
I'll give you this one because even though it's not good, it's awesome schlock.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a perfectly well done, hot off the grill McDonald's cheeseburger.
Yep. Number two, one of the greatest war movies ever done, Black Hawk Down.
I knew you were going to pick that one. This one's pretty good.
It's excellent. And number
it's not one of the greatest war movies ever done. Watch, like Apocalypse Now is, you know, like
when I was flying to New Zealand,
Saving Private Ryan, like it does not deserve to be in the category of those movies.
Oh, Bob, you fell into my trap. When I was flying to New Zealand, I was reading the Black Hawk Down book, and I was sitting next to a soldier who fought in Afghanistan.
Afghanistan.
I went total douche for that.
Oh, man. When I'm regattaing.
And he says that book is one of the most realistic portrayals in the movie as well of what it's actually like in war. So number two for me is Black Hawk Down. And number one, Beverly Hills Cop.
Totally.
Beverly Hills Cop at number one. An apology to Enemy of the State. Again, with Gene Hackman. And this time with a different African-American leading man. This time with Will Smith. Another great movie. But yeah, number one, Beverly Hills Cop.
Okay, now those are the best five films out of about, geez, the entry is about 140. Like he's been in a lot of TV too.
A lot of TV.
Most of it's
Apologies
crap.
To Thief with James Caan.
I thought that should make it. I'm surprised it didn't.
It's right here, Bob, on my also-rans as I was debating.
Jerry Bruckheimer has the amazing ability to be shameless in the films he makes.
Yeah.
It's not about anything other than butts and seats.
Yeah.
Big ideas, big broad scenes.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know.
That's him.
There's a place for it.
There is a place for it. And, I mean, I hated The Rock. I hated Armageddon. Con Air has got some funny moments, mostly because of just Malkovich and Buscemi are just so good.
I think Con Air deserved to be in there.
No.
It's pretty fun. It's a pretty fun movie.
Have you seen The Ref?
No.
Watch The Ref.
Okay.
It's an underrated Christmas movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like Dennis Leary.
Mm-hmm.
But you like Dennis Leary because you are Dennis Leary from remember song Asshole?
Yeah.
I read porno. No. Football.
No, I don't read porno. I don't read porno. And then as he slowly, you know,
I like porno and football and books about war. And Matt, what were you doing when you heard that radio?
Well, on at the least radio? Two out of three.
Mm-hmm.
He's
sitting there reading a book about war.
Yeah, probably watching football.
Yeah.
You know, and then with my tasteful Victorian nudes, Victorian era nudes. What can I tell you? I'm a Rubenesque sort of guy.
Do you got any sports to do? Because I got some observations I want to make.
I like how you asked, do I have some sports?
Actually, I have a sporty observation about Seattle, just one thing.
Sure.
For everybody's crying about how they're not in Quebec City, Seattle's a better market. It's a huge market. It's a rich market. There's all kinds of built-in rivalries there. So this whole why can't Canada have more teams?
Yeah.
It's obviously way better for the league to have the team succeed in Seattle versus Quebec City.
That's fine. Put it in Seattle. Just take the Arizona team and put it in Quebec.
Toronto should have a second team.
No, you're right. Yeah.
We are so, one, everybody loves the Leafs.
Yep.
But the idea of, you know, a Markham team or something just outside, like a 9-0, like as the city continues to move further and further outwards, everybody knows this market could sustain two teams. If New York can have two baseball teams, Chicago can have two teams.
The Coyotes come to Toronto and expand.
The New York area has three teams.
Yeah.
Toronto has one.
Yeah. It's true. No.
All the financial feasibility studies have shown time and time again, it could totally make money.
Yep.
There's a bunch of politics there, but they just don't want to kill the golden goose. Toronto makes so much money for the league. Why would you screw with it?
They'd make a couple percentage points less.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
The feasibility studies seem to suggest it would carry on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But when you really look at the power brokering, don't cry me a river about Quebec City. That's a stretch of a market and we all know it.
Yeah. Hey, Doug, I know you're listening. There's a lot of people that don't like you. There's a lot of people that do like you. That's nice.
Fewer and fewer all the time.
Yeah. You want to, get a little diversion from, you know, some of the programs you may be cutting and people get angry, get the second team here. You get the second team. Like, you're a populist. Get a second hockey team and you will get a second term.
In fact, I'm going to turn this into the ultimate Doug Ford burger here. Yeah. You ready?
Yeah, go.
Second team, dollar beer at the arena.
Oh my God.
Dollar beer at the arena.
Dollar beer.
And all of the platinums.
Yeah.
You can only fill them up by guys who are in the union.
I don't know if Doug wants
to. Yeah, maybe not the union. I was thinking blue collar, but
yeah,
blue, you know, how would you organize that? I thought maybe the union.
Yeah.
Now, you're right about that.
Yeah.
But no sushi. No sushi at the game and dollar beer.
Why? I'm sick and tired of, oh, it's just the sushi Chardonnay crowd. Sushi and Chardonnay are delicious.
Not at a hockey game, Matt. Not at a hockey
don't
game.
Don't be an elitist, Bob. Don't tell me what I can eat and drink at a sporting event.
How dare you, you Republican co-opter, turn around and say that because you're drinking Chardonnay at sushi at the hockey game. Wait, let me finish.
I will.
That I am the elitist because I am judging you.
Yes, you are. There is a level of elitism because this is how it should be and this is the right way and you're doing it the wrong way. Sorry, that's a form of elitism right there.
Can the average family afford to get a nice bottle of wine and some sushi at the game?
God, no.
Right.
They should work harder, get better jobs.
Maybe if you'd stayed in school, people, you'd be in the platinums.
The world needs ditch diggers, too.
Speaking of food, I heard something really interesting on the Bill Simmons podcast the other day. This actually tied into something I experienced at the Toronto airport. And so this rings true to me.
Yeah.
He speculated that one of the next waves in sports marketing was going to be in arena famous chefs setting up shop and serving their food.
Yep.
And that made total sense to me. What this had to do with the airport for me is I was going through Terminal 1, I guess it was, and I saw that Roger Mooking had a restaurant in there.
Who's Roger Mooking?
He used to be in Base's Base, and he turned into a chef, and he's got a couple shows. I know the guys who produced them. You know, he's kind of got a Caribbean flair to some of his cooking, you know, like kind of spicy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, he had a restaurant in there, and I looked at it, and I thought, well, yeah. Because, you know, I don't necessarily just want to get a $12 tuna sandwich. I'll sit down and have a meal.
Yeah.
You know, especially if I got a layover. But then it really dawned on me, Bill Simmons made a good point. Celebrity chefs are so famous and so part of our world now. Of course you could have one at the what do they call it? Not the ACC anymore. What is it now?
Scotia something or other.
Anyway, at the Gardens.
Yeah.
Couldn't you see that instead of Berkey's Doghouse, there being like some stand for a famous Toronto chef?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Because with all arenas, it's one of the biggest things owners have to deal with. Not for the Leafs, but how do you get people to go to your arena? And I think this is especially big in football when NFL is such a slog just because all the other games are at home and, you know, just the games are longer than a hockey game.
And here's the thing. Toronto fans don't have it good because we're Canadian and we don't demand better.
Yeah.
But when you go to American arenas, the food is good.
Yeah.
In a lot of them. The TFC game isn't bad. You can get some pretty good food options there. But even something as simple as a Dodger dog at Dodger Stadium, it's a damn good hot dog. Everything here is like, we grew up on Versa dogs, Matt.
Yeah, we did.
In the foil.
Yeah.
Steaming. Until it came out basically wet.
Yep, that is true.
Bun was soaked in your hand.
Yep, and then you just go over with a, the ketchup.
You tear open a packet with your teeth of generic brand mustard.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's true. I'd absolutely love to see it.
All right, so what do you want to get to? Because how much time do we have left? I'm going to guess about 20 minutes.
We have got about 14.
Wow.
Yeah.
I have so many things to get
to. Okay, one quick hot take. Derrick Henry, 240 yards and 4 touchdowns. Oh. But here's the thing. Derrick Henry is not that great a running back. Like, Derrick Henry got all those yards, but he's been bad for most of the year. Why? He doesn't fit 2018 running back. He wasn't targeted once, didn't catch one pass. He's not a shifty guy. If you block for him and he can run straight at full speed, then he can do it. And he had a couple on that 99-yarder. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. But it's so funny to watch Derrick Henry as a reminder that even though he had a fantasy god of a day, he's not a great 2018 running back.
All right. So I'll be honest. As you know, I haven't watched much NFL this year.
Yeah.
I made a conscious decision. I just didn't have time. Mm-hmm. I wanted to keep up with hockey and basketball and the great James Duthie theory. With every child, you lose a sport.
Yeah,
I don't have a child, but now I got a writing career, so it's kind of similar. So I flipped by after the Leafs game.
Yeah.
and it's 30-2. Tennessee is up on Jacksonville 30-2.
Yeah.
And I looked at myself and I said, am I so lonely and desperate that I'm going to watch a game this bad as opposed to do literally anything else?
Yeah.
Yeah. Click.
Click.
TV went off.
So that's my only football thought was that Derrick Henry can have this great day, but he's not meant for 2018.
All right. I got these aren't really dot, dot, dots. I guess, yeah, let's call this dot, dot, dot for argument's sake. Okay.
Yep.
I'll whip it up that way. Okay. It really bugs me when restaurant servers say perfect after everything you say. Dot, dot, dot. I watched Black Panther on the plane. I liked it. It's not Golden Globes good, but it's better than I thought. Dot, dot, dot. And do you pack sandwiches for the plane? Dot, dot, dot.
All right, let's first start with Black Panther.
Okay.
It's not even the best superhero movie this year. Infinity War was.
Mm-hmm.
Black Panther is a good movie. It relies a little too much on CGI at the end. I do like the pathos of the villain. And it's a really good movie. It deserved the amount of money it made. I can't wait for the second one. But Golden Globe? Get the bleep out of here.
Infinity War was definitely better. Here's what I would say. I'm glad I saw it months after the release.
Yeah.
Because the initial hype was too much.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't as good as people were saying,
yeah,
in my opinion. At the time, they were presenting it as the greatest comic book movie ever made. And I don't think it's that.
It's not.
It's interesting, though, for a lot of reasons. Like, it really is interesting for a lot of reasons. And then there was the backlash, as people felt like they were being forced to say that this thing was awesome when it actually wasn't, or else they were going to be ostracized from the critical wave that loved it.
Yeah, or also you're a bigot if you don't love this movie.
Right.
All that's predictable.
And the truth was, as is often the case, it was somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
It was a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
There was some good acting.
Yep.
I loved the way the mythology was twisted around, like, to be totally unique within that world.
Yep.
You know, that was great. I liked it, but I don't know if it's Golden Globes worthy.
It's not. It absolutely
isn't. Like, Ryan Coogler made Creed.
Yeah.
I think Creed's a better movie.
Mm-hmm.
Creed's really good. I watched it again the other day. No clunkers.
Yeah.
All the scenes are good.
Yeah. And listen, it's, but then just like the action sequence near the end goes on too long.
They all do, though. You can't really blame Black Panther for that because they all do.
Well,
you know what was the best?
Captain America's Civil War. That was the best one when they're fighting each other. That one was
awesome. Good because it was localized,
yeah,
right? It was localized. That was, and I think that's probably the best Marvel movie, Captain America Civil War.
Yeah.
I think probably for
that, me. That or Infinity War. Infinity War had real stakes. People died. Like,
well, for now.
For now. That's
for
true.
Now.
That's true.
Yeah, real stakes. Matt,
by the way,
you read comics.
By the way, yeah, that's true. See,
oh my God, Spider-Man's dead. Oh no, he isn't.
Oh wait, let me go to.
It's like Matt's phone.
Wait, let me go to IMDb. Wait, no, see the actors.
In post-production.
Yeah, he's in post-production for Spider-Man 3, 4. And
Spider-Man's like your phone.
Yeah.
Right? It flushed down the toilet and it came back miraculously.
Ooh, that analogy is almost as good as Cap'n and his Pascal Siakam.
Yeah.
That was a good one. So yes, I agree with that. Sandwiches on the plane? Absolutely. When we fly,
do you make sandwiches for the plane?
Because you're such a finicky. Yeah.
Finicky flyer. I thought you would never do it.
Oh no. I'm a great flyer. I'm finicky about I don't like bringing luggage, large luggage on the plane. I hate the people that delay everyone else. I just want to sit there quietly, and I got my one little bag, which is my laptop bag, and that's it.
Cause so. I thought of you, actually, when I was coming home, because a lot of these flights are super booked, right?
Yeah.
And the one coming home from Vancouver, jammed.
Yeah.
And you know it's going to be jammed when 45 minutes out there announcing if anyone would like to voluntarily check their on-air, you know, their,
their
in-flight luggage.
Yeah.
Which nobody ever
their
does.
Their carry-on luggage. No one ever
nobody
races
ever
to
does.
The front. Yes, I would like to do my carry-on luggage to suddenly be checked.
I spent
checked.
45 minutes in my house ramming this thing full so that I could pack it anyway and
yeah.
put it under the plane.
Yeah.
Okay, so I was one of the first ones on, and I have a CPAP machine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the breathing machine.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so I put it up there, and it's not like fragile, but there's a reason you don't park it with the cargo because it can break. And this woman comes home with a bag, and the stowaway top is just a little too small, and she's ramming it, and it doesn't even fit. Like a third of it is like sticking out, and then the flight attendant comes along and rams it down even further. And so I pull the flight attendant over. I'm like, my CPAP machine's up there.
Yeah. Nothing they can do.
Yeah, it's fragile. She goes, well, let's take it out. I'm like, no, there's like 30 bags now packed in front of it. I go, so what do I do if it's damaged? She goes, let me get somebody.
Yeah. Well, so there's nothing.
It was fine. And they made me check it after the flight was done. But I looked at that and I thought, wow, this person is so desperate to have their bag on this flight.
Oh, yeah.
They were just ramming it.
Yeah. And it's a direct flight Vancouver to Toronto. Your luggage is going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hate that. I hated bringing extra luggage on the plane. I'd rather have checked it. It's just who I am. But yes, definitely bring food. By the way,
okay. I see buying food on the plane as a sign of weakness.
Really?
Yeah. You know, all the time when you judge people, like, you know, when they take the elevator as opposed to walking three flights,
The
many, many ways in which you judge people.
Yeah.
I believe that if you don't pack your own lunch for the plane, it's weak.
No, because you like looking at the menu and ordering something. It's fun.
It all sucks and it's all overpriced.
Well, you're right about the overpriced.
You take two pieces of prosciutto.
Yeah.
You put them between some bread.
Yeah, but it tastes better when it's on a plane. You know, because
you're hungry.
Because you're hungry.
You're hungry.
By the way, if you want to infuriate a plane filled with people, get on the plane last and bring a big bag of McDonald's. They are going, like, at that point, they will give you their firstborn. They'll give you their firstborn son for 4 French fries.
Oh, man, that's cruel.
Oh, my God. By the way, real quick, Bob,
mm-hmm.
I used one of our services. I'm glad I did.
What'd you get with C-Giant?
C-Giant. I'm taking, and I hope my nephews aren't listening to this pod. They're kids. They're not listening. I'm taking my nephews to like the Masters of Champions of Magic show, which, by the way, damn, is it expensive. I'm spending more money on my 8 and 6-year-old nephews than I think on anyone else. But at the same time, it was the perfect gift. And when it's a perfect gift and then you don't have to think about it or keep finding something, you're like, great, $140 a ticket, fine. And you're like, damn it. But I use Seat Giant and discount code. I use Bob and Matt. And I save money, which thankfully, you know, it's going to help me. And hell, some of that money comes back to the pod, which is good because doing this podcast is not free. We have to pay for stuff. SeatGiant.ca, Canadian owned and operated company. And all your tickets are in Canadian dollars. No need to convert. I used it. You should use it as well.
Cause, as an uncle, you know what I say? You are, that's supposed to be an arrow striking.
That was me running away from wanting to spend the money.
Hang on a second. This is supposed to be, okay, let's try this one.
Try again. Thank you. And by the way, the show doesn't start till 8 p.m. So I told my brother that. He's like, we'll nap up our kids during the day.
How old are they?
8 and 6.
Wait a minute. The 8-year-old needs a nap
in order to see.
The six-year-old does? Okay.
This is not Italian.
My daughter is half Italian.
Yeah, I know.
But so are you guys.
Yeah. But Elliot just turned 6 a couple days ago.
When Charlotte was 6 years old, it was New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
It was 1 a.m.
And she's like, wake up, Dad.
We walked into my in-law's garage.
Yeah.
And all the Zios and Zias and old-timers are having butts.
Yeah.
And she's sitting there on an overturned crate talking to them at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just like hanging out in the butt circle.
Yeah. That's great. Bob, we got about a minute and a half.
Well, you know what? I'm really proud of us because we did all Leafs for about half an hour and then almost no sports for the next half an hour.
Well, the next podcast, are we going to do it?
Do what?
Are we going to do a love
action? Yeah, of course we are.
The
top five
podcast.
But here's the thing, though. You can't do major characters.
No. Bob.
Top five secondary characters in Love Actually.
Oh, I'm going to go beyond that. I'm going to do a rankings of the five characters that got it the worst at the end. And here's a question for you, Bob. Who had it worse at the end? Emma Thompson or the fat sister of the one who married Colin Firth?
Emma Thompson.
Really? So the other one who has to live with her father, who actually wants, her father hates her and is trying to sell her off all the time, she is in a better position than Emma Thompson, that still has the love of 2 children and, you know, is able to be independent, live on her own, instead of being stuck with a domineering, patriarchal father? Oh, Bob.
Can we agree that Laura Linney is number one on that list?
She could be, maybe.
Oh, brother. Why do you want to do this? It's so much more interesting to do last minute, like, secondary characters.
We'll do that as well. We're not doing that as well. I'm just telling you right now, Bob, don't bring a knife to a gunfight when it's Love Actually.
Matt, you don't even. Don't even.
Yeah!
Like, there's a... do you know more about the NFL than I do? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Wine, I think that goes without saying.
Yeah.
Love Actually, no. No, you do not.
Watched it 2 days ago, Bob.
Doesn't matter, Matt. Okay. I've seen it 30 times.
Okay.
In fact, Richard Curtis is my screenwriting hero.
All right.
Okay.
I can't wait for next week, Bob.
I can't wait either. I wish it was next week now.
Me? No, never wish time away. We're on this planet for a short period of time. Goodbye, Bob.